Hey guys, welcome to the Through Ball podcast where we talk everything about football and more. We have an interesting transfer window going on and we have lots of ups and downs in the results that have been going on. So today we'll just have a very casual discussion about all of that. Starting off with the biggest upset, probably like Liverpool are out of the FA Cup. And in our panel today to discuss all this, we have with us Gaurav, a Chelsea fan.
Hi, what's up?
We have Naval, a Barca fan.
Hello all.
We have Neeraj, a Manchester United fan.
Hey guys.
And we have Amit Mishra, who is currently a Schalke fan, but he's actually a Liverpool fan. So yeah.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. So yeah, and I'm Ruaife, a Manchester United fan, and here we go. So, Liverpool lost to West Brom 3-2, where the game was pretty end-to-end. There was a lot of controversy involving VAR, involving allowed goals, disallowed goals. So, Amit, how did it go?
Obviously a massive upset. I'm going to first speak of the positives because there are like very few of them anyway. The biggest positive that I could think of was it was an FA Cup game. So last season, I think around this time, we hit a pretty bad run of form as well, where we were knocked out of the FA Cup. The thing is, obviously, qualifying in the top four is important. So, maybe with a few days remaining, we'll take this defeat more seriously than... So we were on this run of form where we had like 13 unbeaten games after the defeat against Spurs. So we were sort of complacent after Coutinho's departure, you know, because we beat Man City. Like, oh, we sort of have the team to do it despite Coutinho's sale. So hopefully, like, we take things more seriously after the defeat. Barring that, I think it was again another abject display from the defense and midfield. Mainly the midfield because West Brom sort of took us by surprise in the first 30 minutes. In fact, it was them doing all the pressing. So our midfielders were sort of shell-shocked. Emre Can didn't know what to do. Gini Wijnaldum is never good against teams that press high because he isn't a natural player who plays in a deeper midfield position, which he was asked to do against West Brom. And our resources were pretty stretched as well because Adam Lallana again picked up a thigh injury. Jordan Henderson just returned, so we don't have the numbers, and again that goes back to saying, you know, that we need a few more players. The defense, what do I say about Liverpool's defense? We've always been shite. So, despite Van Dijk being there, because, you know, the sheer pressing that West Brom had, our back four was so exposed that, you know, we couldn't really do anything. I mean, there's not much you can do when there are like two or three players running at you and doesn't really matter what price tag you have. Pretty bad performance. Hopefully, you know, we have a game immediately tomorrow, so hopefully we bounce back.
Interesting stuff. So yeah, like, apart from that, we have had other pretty normal results, but let's dwell into like Liverpool more. Like, after they finally beat the run of Manchester City, everyone was like overjoyed and scared probably at the same time. Because seeing Liverpool, we were like, oh my god, they're a force to be reckoned with. But then they lost back-to-back games against Swansea and West Brom. Sadly, which are currently placed 20th and 19th in the Premier League. So, how does that loss reflect on Liverpool like as a team, Gaurav?
I think we have come to expect this of Liverpool in the recent times, right? Erratic run of results. The match against City, they were pretty terrific, but they have been terrific in attack all season, I think. The defense, as Amit pointed out, has been like quite shaky all through the season, but I think what he pointed out was that there is no cover for the defense, which is, you know, an important point. Actually, I wanted to ask Amit, since Coutinho has left, you guys not have bought any, replacement as such. So do you think, like... a lack of depth will hamper your season for the rest of the thing?
Definitely. So it's two things right now, basically. One is obviously the depth. The second thing is, you know, a lot of people presume that players like Riyad Mahrez or who was the other chap, Thomas Lemar, I think recently we've been linked with Keita Balde as well. So a lot of people presume that, you know, these guys could be good replacements, but the thing is, they don't really play in that deeper role that Coutinho does. So yeah, if you're playing against a team at home where, away from home where, you know, you might have space to exploit, it might work out, something that happened against City. But like we've seen in the last two games where, you know, teams play a deeper, a low block, it doesn't really matter if you have Sadio Mane or Mohamed Salah in your team, because these are players who need service. These are players who need space to exploit. So I don't really think if, you know, even if we maybe sign Riyad Mahrez or Keita Balde, maybe Thomas Lemar could do a job because he's sort of a more creative player and can pick a pass. But yeah, we need someone, you know, who can unlock a defense like Coutinho could. So especially the games at home where teams sit deep and, you know, our players run into a cul-de-sac. So yeah, that's the problem. And then going back to the depth, because we have players who pick up injuries more often than not, like Adam Lallana, for instance. Sturridge, again, doesn't really matter if he leaves because he's not there to play anyway. Even Jordan Henderson in the last 2 years has been sort of injury prone, missed a lot of games. So yeah, definitely we need a few more numbers. There's Champions League coming up in like the coming week, I think February, first week or whatever. So yeah, we do need the numbers and a good replacement for Coutinho.
Right, I think with Coutinho gone, what Liverpool are missing, a player who can dictate the game, as Amit rightly said, he can play the deep role also, and with teams sitting deep, I mean, that's sort of important.
Yeah, Coutinho also like scores a lot of goals from outside the box, like something which they've missed quite clearly against Swansea, because no one is taking shots from outside the box like Coutinho does usually, and Coutinho is more accurate than most players from 20-25 yards. So I think like Liverpool do need to sign at least one midfielder, not to replace Coutinho, but, you know, just to plug the gap for the time being, at least until the summer, and then they can probably try and get someone kind of a big name.
Well, to digress here a little, I mean, I would like to go against the fact like they need a replacement for Coutinho. Now, to be frank, yes, Coutinho was a very valuable player. He used to unlock defenses and such. But even without Coutinho, they've played, like, let's say, like the City game, where they have probably played the best football throughout this season. And this was without Coutinho, where they unlocked City's defense, which probably is not much. But, you know, it's a team with a very good defensive record as of now. And that too with Salah, Mane, Firmino, you have really good players who can press a lot. So I think it's more with respect to like they need someone to sit in front of the defense, because they expect Jordan Henderson or Wijnaldum to do the job, and honestly I don't think either of them are cut out to do that job. So they need like a solid no bullshit CDM, you know, who'll just sit there no matter what and intercept the passes, intercept, you know, tackle, do some heavy lift, do some like dirty work for Liverpool, because that I think is one area where they need to see. And secondly, I think again the defenders that they have, like Van Dijk and Matip, okay, Matip might be a little error prone now that it is being shown since Van Dijk has come, but they are pretty good defenders, and I think it's more the system that complement, like that does not help them in their cause. So, with respect to the defenders, I think that's the problem. But here we have another person who is elated that Coutinho has left Liverpool. Yes, he's a Barca fan. So, Naval, what do you how do you feel like once Coutinho has left? Like, you've seen Coutinho play for Barca. So,
Yesterday he made his debut, and to be honest, it was quite a startling lineup. As expected, we have a Copa del Rey fixture against Valencia, so main players were rested. And regarding yesterday's performance, we didn't do exactly well, but somehow we managed to sneak up. And Messi, despite You see, despite playing very average in the last game, he yet scored the free kick winner for us. Regarding Coutinho, yesterday he started on the right, and that is what that was pretty startling for me, because if you have Coutinho in your team and if you start him on the right, that is like total waste from the start, and it should be from the left or the center. And at the very, very start, Coutinho was playing at the right, and he was with all the ball and position he had, he was trying to get into the middle and was trying to create something, but that didn't go along well. So that was a pretty surprise for me. Prior to that game, at the Copa del Rey, where he first made his debut against Espanyol, I think Coutinho did pretty all right. He looked confident and he was very good with the ball around, as compared to Dembele was looking very nervous at the ball, and he was misplacing a few passes and all. But Coutinho, to be honest, looked a bit natural, and it's just a matter of time. I feel Coutinho will do really good, and he's just to get into the jive of Barca, and it's new for him. It will take him some time, but I think he will do well. And to be honest, all Barca players who debut, especially the attackers and midfielders who do, they do have a tendency to have the nervousness at the start and all. But Coutinho looked very natural for me. So barring yesterday's game, I feel that we had a few players missing, like Busquets and Alba. Alba later came on, but Busquets didn't play. If we play our full strength, and Coutinho will obviously do better. And let's see, time will tell.
So here you can see Coutinho adding some great value to Barca. So moving on, let's move to the exciting transfer window. I think this is probably one of the most exciting winter transfer windows we've had in a very, very long time. Like, such a big name transfers, you know, names just going around left, right, center. Okay, we've like just a few days ago, we've just completed the Sanchez transfer, the whole this thing saga that went on and on. People kept on waiting for weeks, like, as to when it was going to happen, and it happened. Now we have other big name transfers going on. So I'll let the others talk as to with respect to their clubs and the other clubs. Go ahead.
So as per like the latest transfer which has actually come into light is you know, the domino effect which is happening between the clubs of Dortmund, Chelsea and Arsenal. So Arsenal it seems are getting Aubameyang, Chelsea are loaning Batshuayi to Dortmund, and Chelsea are getting Giroud in return from Arsenal. And that's pretty startling, you know, one wouldn't have thought that Arsenal will sell Giroud to a Premier League rival such as Chelsea. But it seems they are pretty desperate to get Aubameyang, and Aubameyang do want a striker in return. And that's why Batshuayi is going on loan. But Chelsea said that they won't let Batshuayi go on loan till they get a replacement, which is why Giroud is coming. So, I mean, this domino effect is, you know, pretty startling.
The thing with Dortmund is they basically have too much faith in their youth right now. Last game week against Hertha Berlin, Jadon Sancho, 17-year-old.
Hasn't he started two matches in a row, though?
Yeah, so he started against and last week,
right.
So he played on the left, I'm presuming Marco Reus is back in training, so I'm presuming he'll eventually play up front and replace Aubameyang or Alexander Isak, who've been playing there. So yeah, Aubameyang was there was a banner at Dortmund saying if you don't want to play for us, you can just leave. In fact, there was a similar banner for Leon Goretzka a week back, who joined Bayern for a free transfer. So I'm pretty sure Aubameyang's on the move because Dortmund have these upcoming players who are ready to take over immediately. So I think that's one transfer that could very likely happen.
Yeah, I mean, quite reputable and reliable resources have reported a transfer, so I think it's done. But also, it seems that Batshuayi is moving to Dortmund. Dortmund made contact with Chelsea regarding this. So do you think Batshuayi can start this?
I think so, yeah, definitely, because obviously he has more experience over Sancho. Alexander Isak, who's been given a few minutes as well. Batshuayi can start, but I'm not sure. Like, is he a sort of a player who combines well with all these quick-footed attackers, or is he more like a
Right. So, I mean, Batshuayi, I will say, is not a finished product yet. He can link up well, but I think he holds the ball for a bit too long than is what is required. But his finishing is quite good. If you give him a chance, he will finish that chance. So, I mean, if, you know, he...
So, the thing with Aubameyang is, people presume he is, like, a really good finisher because of his output. But because of the sheer number of chances Dortmund created, if you look at his goals per chances ratio, I think he'd probably rank below the likes of Anthony Modest, Robert Lewandowski last season, who, you know, scored a similar number of goals. In fact, even Henrik Mkhitaryan, when he joined United the season before that, his output was like really incredible because of the number of chances Dortmund created. But because he moved from this sort of a proactive approach that Dortmund have to playing under Mourinho, he couldn't really like replicate his performances, which could be the case with Aubameyang if he moves to a similar club. But again, I think it's Arsenal, so might work out.
Also, do you feel like Aubameyang, you know, I mean, obviously he's very fast and that's one of his main attributes. Do you think he relies on his speed a bit too much?
Not really, because the thing with Dortmund is because they play this high-pressing system, you don't really have, you know, players bursting through to the opposition half from their own half. They're always there, you know, in and around the final third where they try to win the ball. So, yeah, obviously his pace, he has a lot of pace. He has this incredible burst, which will help him in the Premier League. But I think he has other attributes as well. You know, he started off at Dortmund as a winger. So, yeah, he can take on a man and beat him, not just relying on his pace. He has a trick or two up his sleeve as well. So yeah, but I'm still not sold on his finishing attribute that people usually like.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Arsenal fans can look forward to is the Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang combination.
Okay, Gaurav.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, since you're a Chelsea fan, Chelsea were quite going for a striker now time, and the joke saga was continuing that Chelsea were getting linked to each and every striker, and now finally, in a few hours back, it was sort of seemingly reported that you guys are going for Olivier Giroud. And Olivier Giroud, he was on the bench for Arsenal for quite a good games, but still he has some very good goals and he has some good records as compared to his goals and stats. So what do you feel about Olivier Giroud coming to Chelsea?
Yeah, see, compared to the strikers that we have been linked with, I think Olivier Giroud is a massive upgrade. Keeping all that aside, I think Giroud is a fairly decent striker. His returns, goal ratio in the Premier League is also quite good. And he has done well over the past for Arsenal. He is criticized, and I think rightly so in some instances, because he slows up the game. I think Chelsea are looking for a target man, and I think, I don't think we will get many better than Giroud at this point of time. And Edin Dzeko, I don't know, I think he's better. But talks are broken down with him regarding the contract negotiations, I think. So, yeah, I will be fairly content with Giroud at this point of time.
I just want to come back to this Aubameyang thing. Now, there is a general feeling that Arsenal are going to benefit greatly with Aubameyang. But just hear me out. Like, the thing is, if Aubameyang comes, we know about his professionalism as to how he's dealt with this transfer. You know, in Dortmund, like how he has like gone through it. And even today, he was supposed to be present at a court hearing. I think he missed it, stating the reason that he was sick. So, in essence, Arsenal are basically signing a diva. And that was the problem they had with Sanchez. Only thing is, Sanchez used to cry because due to lack of ambition. So, how do you think Aubameyang will have a negative effect on Arsenal rather than a positive effect?
I think this one thing that I can't understand about Aubameyang's transfer is he's basically moving from one average club to another. So if you've noticed, a lot of these Dortmund guys, Shinji Kagawa, Mario Götze.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I mean, everyone's taken a step up in their career. And these guys were like extremely young. These guys moved when they were like 24, 25. So, you know, despite knowing that obviously they'll have at least two more moves left in their careers, they immediately made the step up to a bigger club. Aubameyang is arguably at the peak of his career at 29. And he still thinks, oh yeah, moving to Arsenal might be a good idea, which is something I never get.
Yeah, and there's also this thing that, like in the past 7-8 years, like since Klopp first won the Bundesliga with Dortmund, almost every attacking player who has moved to another club, like take Nuri Sahin, Shinji Kagawa, Godza, and apart from Lewandowski, everyone else has pretty much flopped. Like you can say that they have not done well outside of the Bundesliga and the Dortmund system. So how do you think like Aubameyang is going to do at Arsenal? Because Arsenal, although they are kind of similar to Dortmund, they don't have the same intensity of the way Dortmund hound the opposition defenders and midfielders. So how do you think that whole dynamic works for them?
I think in terms of teams, right now the best, if I'm talking about the Premier League, the top three teams that would have worked out well for Aubameyang would have been Man City because of how they play, Liverpool because of how they play, and arguably Tottenham because of how they play. Arsenal are, yeah, probably the next best after that. But yeah, going back to what you said, because of how the system worked under Jurgen Klopp, the quartet of players needed each other to perform, which is why, you know, every player that tried to move away failed. The only reason Lewandowski actually fared well was because when he initially joined from the Polish club to Dortmund, he was asked to play in a number 10 role. So he played in a number 10 role for a year under Jurgen Klopp, which was his first season. And then Klopp obviously thought that, you know, I can draft in Mario Götze in that role and play Lewandowski up front. And obviously he moved to a team that, you know, had Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery beside him. So it was hard to fail in that sort of a system. So that's why maybe I think Henrik Mkhitaryan moving the other way to Arsenal might work out well, because Jack Wilshere can essentially play the role Julian Weigel was playing. Who's the number 10 at Arsenal again?
Ozil.
Mesut Ozil.
I can't believe you forgot Ozil.
He's probably like... it's Arsenal, man. Exactly.
And Ozil has been their best player.
Ozil has been their best player, but he tends to disappear. So probably disappeared in my mind somewhere. So they have these players who, you know, they have the similar bond of players that Dortmund have. So they have this, they have Wilshere who's similar to Julian Weigel. They have Ozil who's similar to Shinji Kagawa in terms of his passing. They have their forward, if they, you know, somehow manage to get Aubameyang, then well and good. They have a good left back in Kolasinac who's, you know, similar to, in terms of his attacking input, similar to Marcel Schmelzer. So that sort of, that chemistry can sort of work in Mkhitaryan's favor because, you know, it's proactive in many ways.
But where do you think Mkhitaryan is going to play? On the right wing?
I think he's still going to play on the left.
Then where is Aubameyang going to play?
Aubameyang will probably play up top.
Something like
and so Lacazette. So Lacazette.
Yeah, it's basically 4-2-2.
Yeah, because I don't think Wenger, I don't think Wenger trusts Lacazette as it is, because
I get that feeling sometimes because he doesn't let him complete games and
that's the most baffling part, that when in crucial games when Arsenal are trailing by goals, the main striker, he just takes him off, and that's pretty odd to watch.
Oh yeah. And also, who's that other guy? I forget. Alex Iwobi. Yeah, so I think...
See, that's a person you can forget, okay? Like.
yeah. But see, in the recent, like the past two games after Sanchez left, Iwobi has kind of played on the left where Sanchez plays usually. And he has kind of shown like flashes of brilliance, and he played consistently better than how he played when Sanchez was there and he was pushed on to the right. So I think, like, if they can get Aubameyang and somehow, I don't know, like, fit in Iwobi, Ozil, Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, I think they can have something for the Europa League push or for the top four finish. Like, because you never know, like, how a player can fit in the system until they get there. So I think it's kind of interesting, and at the same time, it can go south way also, and Aubameyang can totally flop. But I don't know. It just pushes Lacazette out, and it just feels odd because Lacazette could have gone to Atletico if he waited for like 6 months.
I think what you said is pretty much what Arsenal can do well with. I'd be really scared if, you know, they decide to replace that nutcase in midfield, Granit Xhaka, with an actual defensive midfielder. Then I'd actually be scared, because they'd basically have players, good players, in playing in their own position. So, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's paid too much for Granit Xhaka to just drop him.
Yeah, that is also assuming Wilshere is going to be fit.
Yeah, and lest we forget, Wilshere is yet to sign a new contract, so...
Yeah,
I think the contract is on the table as per reports, right? I think he will sign it, I guess.
Do you guys think Ozil will remain?
I think Ozil is going to sign.
I think Ozil is going to leave.
I think Ozil has actually signed, but they're waiting for the... I think there's an offer for Ozil. Like, say, 250,000 something. And I think Ozil and his agent are just waiting to see how much they pay Aubameyang and get more than that. I think that is where this dynamic is. And I think he'll sign, because there's not many teams who are going to pay what Arsenal will probably pay Ozil and who need him. Like, Juventus probably need him, but they won't pay, like, 250k for him.
But then it is a question of whether you want payment or you want trophies. So if his sight is on more trophies, so I think Juventus move would make more sense. And Juventus, they're the kings of free transfers. So I won't be surprised if Juventus somehow just tap him, you know, within the next like one or two.
There are no links to a search, and like everything points towards Ozil signing a new contract extension. So I think Neeraj is right here.
I think I can somehow I can still see him. There are obviously not a lot of clubs even accommodated in their system, but I could maybe see him moving to Bayern, because I'm not sure about the Zidane situation at Madrid, and if a new manager, if Zidane is sacked, by the way, if a new manager would want James back, which in that case would leave Bayern wanting a number 10. Because Leon Goretzka isn't an out and out number 10, they'd still be on the lookout for a number 10, and so that probably makes Ozil their number one choice.
Yeah,
so. That's too many ifs in one paragraph. So.
And there's also Muller, right? So what about Muller? Like, what happened with Muller? Because I haven't heard his name a lot this season.
Yeah, so Muller was drifting in and out of games because it was Ancelotti, and for some reason Ancelotti didn't want to play his diamond anymore. So he was trying out this odd 4-3-3 setup where Muller played a few games on the wide, and he just couldn't do anything because he isn't that good a player technically. He's basically like a poacher who can, you know, feed off the balls. So Jupp Heynckes has gone back to the old system that he had, 4-2-3-1. And that has allowed Muller to play as a centre forward at times. So that's working out better. But yeah, overall, I think his output has still gone down, even when playing in his natural setup.
It has just come in that for a fee of 25 million, Tottenham have signed Lucas Moura from PSG.
Whoa.
I think that's a good signing for them. You know, like Pochettino has said many times that he wants a direct player. I mean, I don't rate Lucas Moura too much, but he will be another body to, you know, isn't support like them. That they also have.
Yeah, he has good pace.
Isn't he like a rich man's? Isn't he like a rich man's Theo Walcott?
Yeah, pretty much. But I think he'll fit into the Spurs system because Spurs, like, they love direct play. And the thing is, Lucas Moura, with his speed, irrespective whether he does anything on the wing, but at least he'll give them that speed on the counter attack. So if he can, you know, even string like a decent pass through, that will be more than enough. Because they haven't had that bit, especially with Ali underperforming like very badly this season. They've had to rely completely on, let's say, their fullbacks and Kane to get their job done. So literally, Davies, Aurier, and Kane have been like their most important players, apart from Eriksen. Like some odd games where Eriksen actually, you know, shines through. But then it's more with respect to the fullbacks and the same. So that is what I think they need. Lucas Moura will help them a lot. It will be a big plus for them.
Yeah, I mean, he will be an upgrade over Sissoko at least. So.
Yeah, Sissoko.
Yeah, but anyone will be an upgrade over Sissoko.
That's the point, right?
They could have tried to sign Zaha or someone at least.
Yeah, I think with respect to Zaha, I think he has clearly said that he wants to stay at Crystal Palace for this season at least. I mean, I don't know in the summer what will happen, but I think he had made it clear that he wanted to stay this season, which is good because he is getting a starting position, developing well.
Yeah, that probably makes sense for him. But I think he can start at Spurs, right?
Yeah, obviously, Zaha deserves a better club. And he's a very good player. And in all these shockers that Crystal Palace were having at the start, and it's been around for a few seasons, Zaha has been the only very good player in Crystal Palace. And to be honest, it's a very big surprise that why is he not in a big club or in a very decent club, to be honest.
But will he start day in and day out at Spurs, do you guys think?
Yeah, but let's say he'll probably start 60% of the games at the start. But if he keeps performing, I don't see a reason to drop him or something like that. Because Zaha, he completes almost one of the highest percentage of take-ons in the Premier League. And doing it for a club like Crystal Palace, where there's not much quality apart from him in attack, I think he'll be a really big addition for Spurs. But I think I saw some rumors linking him to Spurs at the start of the window.
But
that didn't materialize. So
thing is, Zaha is a good player, I feel. But one thing which gives him success at Crystal Palace is also the freedom that he gets. I don't think he will get that sort of freedom at a bigger club, like Spurs even. So, I mean, of course, he can settle and he can adjust, but I don't know, I still am not sold on Zaha too much, but yeah, let's see.
Also, yeah. In the list of bullshit rumors, okay, like we always have those one or two bullshit rumors. The biggest bullshit rumor I've heard is Manchester United are ready for a swap plus cash for De Gea with Ronaldo. And...
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest load of bullshit that I've heard, you know, in the past 2 to 3 transfer windows, where we'll just give the hair.
I think that and City bidding for Eden Hazard completes it. So,
oh yeah, I think these journalists have it too easy, bro.
This must have come out of Don Balon.
Don Balon is complete shit
for this stuff.
But what do you guys make of the Laporte signing, though?
Before the Laporte signing,
I just want to, like, again, I'm sorry, I have to bring this up. Pep Guardiola apparently thinks he's being restricted because City cannot pay salaries. I mean, guys, what do you think of this amazing statement that he has just put?
I think it's probably, I think he wanted to deflect that whole Alexis Sanchez situation away from the club. Like, if you notice, like, ever since United actually came in and offered their contract to Alexis and Arsenal, you've seen, like, this steady, like, leaks through journalists, Like one journalist claims it's like Sanchez is getting paid 700k a week, and another journalist claims that he's getting paid 180 million for 4 years. So you just see like City, they probably didn't want to spend that much on Sanchez, but they easily could have. But they are pushing this, what do you say, a propaganda that they want to, you know, have this egoless dressing room and everything. But if you look at it, in the summer, they were willing to pay 60 million to Arsenal for Sanchez and 300k to Sanchez. And 300k, if they were going to pay him 300k, that would have made him the highest earner in the City squad anyway. So I think it's just a deflection strategy. I wouldn't read too much into it.
So Aymeric Laporte, he's coming for about 57 million pounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest load of crap, you know. Pep saying that he's restricted by restricted to sign players because of lack of money, and then he's signing a defender for 57 million pounds.
That is kind of funny.
I think it's sort of because all these, you know, I think Antonio Conte first came out and said Chelsea can't compete with the Manchester clubs, and then I think.
But Mourinho, I think that's the truth, right? I mean,
yeah.
But, so no, but, what I'm saying is, so it wasn't just Conte, right? Even Mourinho came out and said Mourinho we can't compete with PSG and
Man City.
City because they have, you know, they've been backed by these Arab owners. So it's not like Pep can just sit there and say that, oh, yeah, I think we'll take all that coming from our rivals. So he's probably not good at saying all this stuff because at Barcelona, you know, the press in Spain was more like, whose eye are you going to poke now? Or like, what tactical change are you going to make today?
And also because Barcelona are a huge club, so even if they spent money, people wouldn't like scrutinize it that much because they were earning that much. But regarding all like people, when you spend at Man City, like what?
Yeah, they're spending around like 57 million for like Aymeric Laporte, who was like I think like 2-3 years ago, who was suddenly like called as the next big thing, and then you know he just traded at Athletic Bilbao. I think according to me, I think this is more like a replacement for Kompany because Pep, I get a feeling that Pep does not favor Kompany too because he's been subbed on and off in a couple of games. And he sees if they're going for a back three, it'll be more of like Otamendi, Stones and Laporte. And even if it's like a back four, which I don't think he will, it'll be more like a Stones and a Laporte thing pairing.
So no, I don't think they'll go for a back three.
Laporte, though, like 2 or 3 years back, we were all, you know, hearing the hype, like Laporte is the next best, I mean, whatever, the next big thing in center defense. But after that, after the injury, that long-term injury that he faced, it died down a bit. So, I mean, how has it developed?
So talking about Laporte, to be honest, Bilbao on a whole have not been performing very good at the moment, and they have been way average. Like clubs like Getafe are higher above them in the league table, and Bilbao is actually a very good club. They have a promising, they have promising youth and players, and they develop a lot, and they have a lot of a thing to do with their academy. And as they say, that Basque players are very hard to get, and negotiating with Bilbao is very difficult at the moment. And to be honest, they had this that Laporte is going to be a potential, and to be honest, he is a potential. Yes, he is injury prone. That is the only downside of him. But to be honest, he can develop further a lot. And in all these recent years that Bilbao has had, he was among the only few players in Bilbao squad who was actually doing decent. And if you compare, if you watch the Bilbao games now, whole defense has been shocking for a while. There have been new players like Etzita, and the forwards and the midfield all are having very old players right now. They have Aritz Adur is somehow luckily still scoring goals for them, and it is lucky. But then having Raul Garcia and all that, the whole forwards and midfield has been extremely poor throughout the season. And even Iñaki Williams doesn't do that well in some games and all. So they even lose out very pretty, you know, they even lose out points to very, you know, very humble teams at home. And like, suppose the Eibar draw last week. So, to be honest, it is good for Laporte. I think he deserved a better club. I don't know. It was regarding City, they have triggered his clause. They have paid the fee and all. But I think he will develop good under Pep. And to be honest, it was just some couple of years back that he was touted as the next big thing. Injuries may happen, but then he can even develop well. He has a lot of time ahead. So let's see how it goes.
So the defense, like for me, the City defense, I still don't rate Stones as, you know, as a very brilliant defender. He's very good on the ball, but I don't know. I still think he's a bit error prone. It will be interesting to see how Pep lines up with Laporte, because Otamendi has been doing brilliantly. So I don't think he can be dropped.
No, I think if they sign Laporte, Otamendi will be dropped. Because because Otamendi is not as good on the ball as Stones or Laporte. So in a Pep Guardiola system, playing out from the back, they need good passes from the back. So I think they'd rather have two good passes. And if they have most of the possession anyway, like there's no way like teams are going to score against them. So that I think it'll be a good signing for them. Having two good decent to good defenders and who are good on the ball along with Ederson. So I think it'll work out for them, but probably in the long term, if some team can like figure out a way to counter that passing out from the back, that thing that no one has done so far, I think they might have problems way in the future. But as of right now, City are looking formidable and Laporte only makes them better.
Interesting stuff. So, fresh news. Jose Mourinho will not stand in the way of Ibrahimovic joining LA Galaxy. What do you guys think of this transfer? According to me, I think it's a brilliant move if Ibrahimovic actually goes to LA Galaxy, since their transfer window, US League's transfer window is going to open quite shortly, and that would mean a big a weight burden lifted off from the United board's head, and which makes it a little more easier for flexibility. Plus, we have zero dependency on Ibrahimovic as of now. So, what do you guys think? Like, is this a good move or not?
Is this going to happen in the winter, like this transfer window?
Yeah, this transfer window. I mean, that is what the news is right now.
Okay, this came out of the blue, right? This was not like...
it just came out in the morning today.
No, that morning, afternoon. I mean, I don't think United... Ibrahimovic has been injured, so I don't think they have used him too much. But I don't know, he could have been an, you know, able body to play with in the later stage of the season.
So, Beckham's team has officially got,
the franchisee.
Franchise in Miami. And he just said about Zlatan, he's one of the best players at the moment, like the normal usual PR stuff. And he said, I'm happy about that and I want him to stay at United. But at the same point, he might come here. So, Beckham also, like, it's kind of cryptic what Beckham is saying. So I don't think it'll be it's a lock for LA Galaxy. But I think he is going to move to the MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a natural move for him. He's like, 35, 36 years old, I think.
He's 37, I think, now.
Okay, then, right. He has had a brilliant career, I think. Yeah, I mean... ending his career in MLS will be, I think, good enough.
Yeah, it's just the knee injury just came at a very wrong time for him, because he was hitting form at that point in the season. And he already had like 28 goals in March. So after that, he had two more months to get more than 30 goals in his first season in England. And he could have probably pushed Lukaku more this season. I think Lukaku also has become a bit complacent this season, because he doesn't have that much of competition. If you see, like, Lukaku, even if he plays bad, there's no one to replace Lukaku on the bench. you can say Rashford, but then if Rashford is a bench option for Lukaku, we'll only have Martial for the left wing. So I kind of think United need to sign one more striker if Zlatan leaves. Like, probably someone on the cheap.
We have Sanchez for that, I guess. Like, Sanchez can, you know, play anywhere in the front four.
Yeah, so, but the thing is, we have Sanchez, Martial, Mata, Lingard, Rashford and Lukaku for four positions. Like, the front, yeah, the forward and the three attacking midfielders slash wingers, whatever you want to call it. So, it's six players for four positions is kind of short. I think we need to have one more. At least, like, you never know, like, what happens.
I think the, like, the more focus should be on the right winger, because we don't have a pure right winger even now. Like, even if Sanchez actually plays on the right wing, we need more of a right winger, because we have been lacking in that department ever since, like, Ferguson left. And nothing has been done. Absolutely nothing has been done to, you know, cover that hole.
I don't think we had a right winger even under Fergie. Like,
Fergie knew how to play. Yeah. This thing. That is completely different. So, yeah. And okay. Speaking of other thing, like, let's say a transfer, you know, that has been going on since a long time, whether it will happen or not. Something like De Gea to Real Madrid. Gaurav, do you think Hazard might...
Before we proceed... Emerson Palmieri is close to signing for Chelsea on a...
Yeah, according to Di Marzio, the deal is done.
So, is he any good?
So Emerson Palmieri, from whatever I saw of him in Roma last season, he was very good. But the problem, he's quite young also, but the problem with him is just coming off a bad ACL injury. So, I mean, predicting how good he will be after injury is, I don't know. But, as like, if you talk about potentials, as a signing, potential signing is quite good. And we also need a left wing back very badly. Alonso has been playing too much this season. We had Baba Rehman, who has moved to Schalke. He was injured. He was also off a long-term injury. So, and we had Kennedy. He is not a proper left wing back. So, I think, to add depth to that thing, it's a good transfer.
Small interruption. The FA Cup draw is out, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, and here are the draws. Like, Chelsea is facing Hull City at home, okay? And we have Manchester United facing away either Huddersfield or Birmingham, depending on their repeat. And Manchester City is facing Wigan Athletic. And Tottenham, after facing Newport, they will face either Millwall or Rochdale. And I'm unable to find Liverpool and Arsenal for some reason.
Who are
West Brom facing? West Brom is facing Southampton.
Oh yeah, go Southampton. Go Liverpool.
See, now watch as Southampton wipe the floor with West Brom. They'll probably win 3-0 or something. And
see, if Liverpool A does not do it, then Liverpool B might just do it. So
they will just promote whoever scores the winner.
Southampton also got the striker, right? From Monaco. I'm forgetting the name.
Carrillo.
So, I don't know. From whatever, Southampton have been struggling very badly. And from whatever, I saw Carrillo in one or two matches in Monaco, like, the guy is quite good leading the line. So, might just be the, you know, answer to all their attacking woes, because no one has been able to score goals from Southampton, which is pretty surprising, because Gabby Adeniyi was in pretty good form last season. So, yeah.
The problem with Southampton is they go after two hipster players and inevitably we end up signing them, which kind of fucks us over as well. So it's like a vicious cycle, man.
Yeah, there's like a huge cycle which starts from Celtic and ends in Barcelona.
I don't think it ends in Barcelona, because I haven't... Like, who has moved from Celtic to Southampton to Liverpool to Barcelona?
Not yet. Like, Van Dijk might be going. No.
I doubt.
That's not happening. Because Liverpool signed him for 75 million and Barcelona are not paying more, like, to sign a defender. And Van Dijk is 26. So, I don't think he's going to move until his first contract gets over.
I mean, even players must look at this way, right? So Southampton is approaching, is okay, two seasons after this, we can move to Liverpool. It's like, like even they know.
It's become some banter club.
Which one, Liverpool or Southampton?
Southampton, okay. Not Liverpool.
Okay, okay.
Liverpool have always been like, a banter club, not become one.
I think under Jurgen Klopp, they have come like so much, like they've moved forward so much from those dark days of Hickson Gillett and Roy Hodgson.
Roy Hodgson.
I remember they signed Paul Konchesky.
They signed Andy Carroll for 50 million. Okay, come on, that's like
no, at least Andy Carroll is... Andy Carroll did some stuff in his life, dude, before that. But they signed Paul Konchesky, and I don't know, dude, that was some weird times.
I think if Klopp is able to guide Liverpool to another top four finish this season, he is doing pretty well. I mean,
if they finish top four again this season, it's really good for them.
They might.
I mean, this Coutinho thing is, I don't know, it might just happen.
Yeah, I think they should, because even though they've lost to Swansea and West Brom in the past 2 weeks, in the past week, but before that, they were on a 18 or 19 game unbeaten run. So they weren't having these problems that much before Coutinho moved. So let's just see. Like I think we need to watch some more games, like for a month, and then we'll probably get a better idea of where Liverpool stand without Coutinho.
Yeah, I think it'll be like it'll be between Liverpool and Arsenal. Like for example, if suppose the new signings give Arsenal a huge boost, then the race for the fourth position will be like pretty intense.
No, I think like one or two bad results for United or Chelsea, they can also be dragged down.
I'm pretty scared,
I think United are 3 points ahead of Chelsea and 6 points ahead of Liverpool.
Yes.
A week ago, it was 2 points ahead of Liverpool. No, 3 points ahead of Liverpool and equal points with Chelsea.
Equal with Chelsea.
So,
right.
Yeah, so you never know which way it could go.
I think it's too close this season.
Yeah.
Considering there's a World Cup coming up.
Say,
for example, you have a player like Eden Hazard and you want him to play the last three games and you want 9 points out of nine. Yeah. And he knows there's a World Cup coming up where he's representing Belgium.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to play and you have a madman like Antonio Conte behind you. I don't think he's going to play the way Conte wants him to, because obviously he wants to play in the World Cup. So I think that might play as obviously not that big a factor, because there are not that many players from the Premier League, top players from the Premier League who are going to play in the World Cup. So that might be a small factor in it.
Yeah, but Lingard is playing in the World Cup, dude.
Don't
disrespect Lingard like that.
Lingard for Golden Boot.
Lingardinho.
But seriously. Yeah,
please refer to him as Lingardinho. Just saying.
Yeah, but okay. I think on current form, he has to start ahead of Dele Alli, right? For England.
Yeah, I think so. He has scored 10 goals already?
11.
Yeah, right, 11 goals already. I mean, Dele Alli is not in a very good form this season.
Dele Alli hasn't been in good form since that Real Madrid game. And before that also, he wasn't in good form. He had that Real Madrid game. And before and after that, he's just been popping up with the odd assist here and there. But compared to last season, this season has been... really bad for him. But I think
Spurs have had a few ups and downs, and despite both Spurs and Arsenal have had their ups and downs, but still there are only 3 points separating both of them, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, but if on Wednesday if Spurs beat United, so it opens up the top four race again for Spurs, because United lose 3 points, and if Chelsea and Liverpool win, and the dynamic is 5 points separating five teams.
So basically, five teams are fighting for three spots. That's a basic thing. So, yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, but I still think Arsenal should concentrate on the Europa League more because it is easier. And even though there are teams like Napoli and Atletico, I think they are looking to get out of the Europa League because Napoli are fighting for the title. And Atletico, maybe Atletico will be a problem because they'll probably want to win a trophy and their top four position is pretty much consolidated, I think. Yeah, so maybe Atletico, but I don't think if Aubameyang moves to Arsenal, Dortmund will be that much of a problem too. So I think Arsenal could probably do well by winning the Europa League and qualifying for the Champions League. Because in the race for top four, they are facing teams which have better players than them, mostly. Like, United have a better team than Arsenal. Chelsea have a better team than Arsenal. Liverpool have a better team than Arsenal. Spurs, probably, they are on same terms, but they have Kane.
Their striker scores, yeah.
Yeah, so they have Kane. Yeah, they have Kane. So, that gives them an edge. So, I think they could go the United way last season and just win the Europa League. I think that is the easier way too because you don't have to play the qualifier also next season.
And you get a trophy.
That's, yeah, but it doesn't count that much.
Arsenal, maybe they might have a parade.
If there was no Champions League for that, and last season we won that, I wouldn't have cared about it. Like
true.
The whole reason they started giving the Champions League place was because teams were not willing to put their best players in the Europa League.
So I think let's just come to a conclusion at this point of time.
Yeah, one thing before that. So Amit, with the Goretzka transfer, I mean, he is still at the club, but there were rumors of, you know, ex-players saying that, I don't know, I think some management people saying that if he is not, because the fans have apparently turned against him and he can be benched. Do you think that's possible?
I don't think he'll be benched because firstly, he's a really good player. He adds a lot to the team. Secondly, because Winston McKennie is our other midfielder. He's an American and he recently picked up an injury. Barring that, we have Max Meyer playing in a deeper role and there's only Nabil Penta left. So we're sort of short on numbers. I think eventually the heat will go down on Goretzka because he's going to start performing better once he gets match fit. He's coming off an injury. So I don't think he'll be dropped just because the fans have turned against him. It's only, the Schalke ultras who have booed him in the games. But apart from that, the reception has been okay. It's not as bad as what Neuer received when he decided to move to Bayern. So, yeah, okay. That answers your question.
Okay, another quick question. Do you prefer Goretzka or Chan?
Goretzka.
Okay.
I guess that answers it. And so we'll just close this discussion with one important question, the biggest question that has been going on everywhere. Are Sunrisers Hyderabad going to win IPL? I'm just kidding. So, who do you think is going to be the most effective transfer of this winter transfer window?
Sanchez. Let's start with Neeraj.
Amit.
Sanchez. I don't know. I'm gonna say Carrillo because he's eventually joining us. So yeah, Carrillo for Southampton.
Novel.
Sanchez. Say Sanchez, bro.
Coutinho.
I forgot about Coutinho, but still Sanchez.
I'll go for Sanchez anyways in the Premier League.
I think it is going to be Sterling to West Brom. West Brom in a bother spot. Sterling, if he can keep fit, Sturridge. I don't know how I got that. But yeah, I think West Brom in a bother spot. I think Sturridge can totally help them out here. I mean, he's still. I feel he's still got those goals in him. But
Sturridge not gonna play, dude.
Yeah, Sturridge not gonna play.
He has to keep fit.
He'll play one game, he'll score two goals.
Rondon will probably break him in the training itself. So.
Yeah, bro, don't joke
Sturridge gets injured, comes back, takes two games to regain fitness. About to score in the third game, he picks up another injury. It's like being a whole life story.
Poor
like,
guy, that's the life of
Yeah, he'll score three goals, dude, in one game. And then three games he'll play in the whole season. He'll have a good goals to minutes ratio. And West Brom fans can boast about it. They'll get relegated anyway.
My verdict, I'm going to pick a very unlikely answer.
Oh, you're not going to pick Sanchez. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be Sanchez. So yeah, I think he'll add a lot. But
yeah, if he flops, I'm blaming you. So
let's hope it doesn't. So I guess that's it from us from the Throughball Podcast. Adios.
Bye.